to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay
you.
Pay that man.
Well, North Bank stacking tax. I'm Tom Holley. This is Dave Scatina on the board. SP Futures down 25 cents. NASDAQ Futures down 35 cents. We're starting a new year after a pretty big first half. We'll see what happens in the second half. And happy Bobby Bonilla Day to you, Lou.
I love this story, and you know it's not just Bonilla. There are a number of other sort of franchise or management stories about players being paid or owners being paid, you know, gazillions of dollars into what looks like perpetuity for basically nothing.
Yeah. I would agree with that, but I'll say this: if you read this, well, you want to explain it or me? What makes it Bobby Bonilla Day? I'll tell you an anecdotal thing if you want to explain it first, because you're probably better at it.
Well, I'll do it. I'll try to do it as succinctly as I can. But basically, Bonilla, who was a good baseball player, just a nightmare apparently to have on your team. excuse me. moved from team to team. At some point, the Mets wanted to get rid of him. They signed him to a long term deal. They traded him off. They needed to get rid of the deal. And they ultimately put him, you know, gave him a long term contract, paying him something like $1 million a year for like 30 years.
Not exactly, but close. It's actually,
yeah, and so. Well, I was trying to do it succinctly, and so he draws over $1 million every year. He hasn't played since what, 2004? 2001.
Yeah, he's 57 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll draw more than $1 million a year from the Mets every July 1 until he's 72, which I guess is sometime in the close to the end of this decade.
Right.
Unbelievable.
But there is a paragraph here that everybody, or most people, almost say everybody, is probably bored stiff, Lou and Dave, when I go through these interest rate and how the value of money is calculated. And I'm sure everybody thinks, what is this guy talking about? I mean, there's no interest, there's no nothing. But there's a paragraph here, which absolutely says, A, you should listen to me once in a while, at least, and how this actually works.
I listen to you all the time, man.
But what I'm saying is, when interest rates are interest rates, and you're talking about different levels of leverage, you know, why would somebody ever do something like as dumb as this? Well, here's why. The New York Mets released Bonilla after the 99 season. They still owed him $5.9 million. All right? But the Mets owner didn't want to pay it off right away. He didn't just want to write a check. So he said the agent and Wilpon worked on a deal. They started with paying him deferred payments that began in 2011. And they came out to 1.19 a year, and now they're supposed to get paid from 2011 to what, 2000 and whatever, 25 or something?
This says 35.
35, okay.
35, so, I think it is. Yeah, I think it actually is 2035.
So this guy made the bet that he had 12 years, okay, that he was going to make so much money in the $5.9 million. He may have an interest rate, prognostication, whatever he had, that he was going to make that $5.9 million by the time it got to be 2011 was going to be worth way more than the annuity of $1.1 million a year for 20 years, where the hell it was. And he made that bet. And you know where he put his money? The $5.9 million.
He invested with Bernie Madoff. With
Bernie Madoff, who was returning 20 or 25% a year, allegedly. But he obviously wasn't. So, I mean, this is something people do all the time. I mean, all the time. I mean, if somebody's going to open up a a hot dog stand or whatever kind of business, which is what America does, right? If you're going to invest any kind of money, how many people right now in the last month invested money in, pick one of these, I'm going to say stupid stocks, pick one of these stocks, AMC,
AMC,
ABB, stuff like that, or what's the other one, GME.
GameStop.
GameStop. You put your money in there. I'm gonna wager you that 80% of those people have credit card debt, have a mortgage debt, have automobile debt. It's the exact same thing. They're gonna make more on that stock than they're gonna earn by paying down the auto, the home, or the credit card. It's the exact same thing, isn't it?
Yes. No, I think that's right. But I mean, the irony of this guy continuing to draw, you know, this kind of compensate, this kind of money level until he's 72. This is something that Jason Whitlock talks about occasionally, where he talks about the kind of generational changing wealth that pro athletes can acquire. And if they're smart about it, and that's sometimes a big if, you know, they can literally alter the course of their family's track for three or four generations.
Okay, now but take
because of the wealth that they can accumulate in 5 or 10 years of playing.
Okay, but now look at the flip side. I mean, everybody looks at this as this poor owner, right? But look at the flip side. We're talking about 1999 to 2011. Now, if Bobby Bonilla would have gotten the $5.9 million, didn't go spend it on cars and gold chains and whatever else people do, if he just put it in the bank back then, which was paying reasonable interest, say he was paying, or if he waited till the 2000 crash and he bought the QQQs at 20 where they went and put all $5.9 million in the QQQs, let's say not even 20, say he put it in there at 50, what's now trading 353. What's that $5.9 million worth? It's an easy $1.9 million a year he can draw out of there, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so look at the flip side. We're talking about 12 years of somebody having $5.9 million essentially to play with and make the stab that at the end of the 12 years, you made so much that you can pay $1.19 million a year, which in today's world, people say, why would you do that? You don't get any interest rate on it. But look, hearken back to the late 70s or the early 80s when I started trading, when you could get 12% in the bank. What's this $1.9 million going to be worth compounded in 12 years at 12%? God's sake. I mean, I don't have the annuity thing in front of me, but what's it going to be worth then? It's got to be, would double every 7 years. So it would have to be worth what? 16, 18, 20, somewhere in there? So, I mean, you know, so when you, but I do have a more interesting story regarding Bobby Bonilla.
Go ahead.
At some point, he was on the Mets at one point, right? Or no, he
was on the Mets a couple of...
Right, but he got... After the first Met deal, he went... Where the hell did he go? He went to the Orioles? Anyway, I was at a game at the Yankee Stadium, right, with the guys at the CBOE. And we go nice and early. You know, I take the subway. I hadn't been on the subway in New York. I want to make sure I got there. So you get on the... Well, at that time, it was the green something-something. God, like five stops, I'm at the stadium in like 10 minutes. I mean, it was unbelievable. So, of course, I'm way early. So I go up there, and the place is empty. This is old Yankee Stadium. Except for there was like a, what do you call it, just a regular old bleachers. They look like high school bleachers. In right field. There was a short spot in right field where there were these regular bleachers, which I couldn't believe in the Yankee Stadium. Those are full. And I'm thinking, okay, what the hell is going on here, right? Sure enough, Bobby Bonilla is playing right field for the other team. So as soon as he walks out there, everybody in that section, Bobby sucks. Bobby sucks. This one on. But Lou, these New Yorkers, they're not like Chicago people. In Chicago, even if he went to do that, I mean, I'm going to say before Facebook or tweet or whatever, even if you organize that, by the second or third inning, after a couple of beers and a couple of hot dogs, people are going to get tired of it, right? They did this the entire nine innings. Never missed the Bobby sucks the entire time he was out there. I was so proud of him. I was shedding a tear that these guys were that much into this. I'm like, what? I never saw such, because he had gone to the Mets, got a big contract, and basically sloughed off in their mind, which he always did wherever he went.
Sure.
You know, that was his shtick. Amazingly talented, and when he was younger, the talent shone through, and when he played on Pittsburgh, he was on with, Who the hell was he on that team with? But he was like an all-star 4 years in a row. And
he's sort of a walking, talking example of something that I've said on the show before, which is that almost you wonder why teams keep signing guys like this. The answer is that almost every pro coach thinks, well, the guy couldn't play for so-and-so, and he couldn't play for such-and-such, but I can get him to play for me. You know, I can deal with whatever his motivational issues are.
Well, he was playing with Bobby Bryant.
It's a kind of egotism that you just say, well, you know, good luck with that, unless you're a magician, or unless you're one of those personality types that just happens to fit with this particular player, you're gonna have trouble.
I think a lot of it, Lou, and this is not even delving into the personalities, but some people only feel that they need to put out for a team that's winning. You know, I had people on softball teams that I never wanted on my team for that reason. Oh man, you guys aren't going to win this league. I don't want to be on your team. I mean, they didn't enjoy playing. They didn't enjoy the people around them. They didn't enjoy, if you weren't the best team, beating the team that was better than you just because it pissed them off. which I always enjoyed. David, you know that. I mean, I realized that at that level, you know, I was an amateur athlete, and if I was playing with people I cared about and we improved every week, that's pretty much as good as it gets. I mean, we weren't going to be Let Us Entertain You. I mean, it's softball. And but there are guys that go from team to team, and every World Series team or World Series wannabe team knows that for 6 months or 4 months, if they're in a pennant race, they're God's gift to the clubhouse or God's gift to anything, and as soon as they aren't, you might as well have me out there. You know, I mean, and yet everybody thinks their team's going to make it, and they go grab these guys. Why did Ricky Henderson, you know, have 10 teams or 8 teams? I mean, they're not unusual, people like that, I don't think. Unfortunately.
No, I think that's probably right. But again, I say that, you know, teams sign these guys because, as I said, I think every pro coach or every coach at a certain level says, you know, yeah, I can work with that guy. I can make him. He'll play for me. And then, of course, it all is a great line. It all ends in tears.
Well, just 1 second, Lou, before you do that, I say there aren't many Ernie Banks's and Al Kaline's that can be on Detroit won 1 year when he was there, that can just absolutely give you 100% effort in preparation every single day for a losing team. That's probably rarer than the person who gets bored on a team that's not winning. I mean, what do you say? How many guys do you think are really putting out, except for the fringe guys and this Arizona team that's like 90 games behind halfway through the year?
I always think of Mike Trout at California, but I get it.
All right, so where do you want to start? We have a million things to talk about today.
Well, I wanted to lead off with the Bill Cosby story, which I hope springs eternal. I hope is a harbinger of news about other cases like this, where when this case broke and when he was indicted, I remember thinking to myself, this can't possibly go forward based on the grant of immunity and how they managed the case. And then it just got worse, with the hung jury and them reopening the trial and then bringing in these additional women who were suddenly allowed to testify in response to the prosecution's desire to bolster its case. But I want to talk about the immunity issue because that really was the trigger. So what happens in this case, and prosecutors get in trouble with immunizing witnesses all the time. So to let everybody know what happens, a grant of immunity is given by prosecutors. It's basically a contract with the state. It says, look, we're not going to prosecute you. And, you know, that has one of two effects. Typically it's, we're not going to prosecute you in exchange for something, for your truthful testimony. It can't be in exchange for a particular a particular storyline. It's got to be in exchange for truthful testimony. Or alternatively, it's used to immunize somebody. You immunize somebody and then can call them as a witness, and they cannot stand on their Fifth Amendment rights against self-incrimination. They have to testify. So this is what happens in Cosby's case. The prosecuting attorney, the district attorney involved initially determines that I'm not going to get a conviction on Cosby. The charges are stale. I have absolutely no evidence. This is before Me Too and the craziness that infected juries and after that. I'm not going to get a conviction. The evidence is stale. We don't have any physical evidence at all. All we have is this testimony. And I've got one victim who's willing to talk about it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to...
Who weren't some of the other ones actually... Some of the other ones were actually past the statute of limitations, right?
Oh, yeah, almost all of them were.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
You know, and so he says, I'm going to immunize Cosby and so that against criminal prosecution so that he will testify in a civil deposition and will give honest testimony at the civil deposition about what he did, and this victim will be able to get some recompense for this guy's conduct. I don't think there was ever any doubt in this prosecutor's mind or a lot of other people's that Cosby acted in a way that was horrific with women, drugging them and then raping them. So he does this. Cosby testifies at the deposition, and the civil trial doesn't even go forward. It settles for, I think, something around $3 million. So that's the end of it. That prosecutor then is defeated in a subsequent election in Pennsylvania. New prosecutor comes on board, and he's got a woman who's willing to testify and who is willing to press charges and who is still within the statute of limitations. So he basically decides, you know, I'm going to run with this, and notwithstanding my predecessor's agreement, which I can invalidate, I'm going to file charges, and I'm going to take this statement that Cosby made in this deposition, where he essentially admits to this conduct, and that's going to come in as evidence. When this happened, I may have made some mention on the show, but I said, you can't do this. This is when the state cuts a deal with somebody like this and basically forces them to violate their Fifth Amendment rights setting up a situation where they can't be prosecuted for the admissions or as a result of whatever comes from the admissions, you can't just go back and turn that deal around and say, okay, oh well, you know, that was with this guy. You signed it. You didn't sign a deal with me, and we're going to press forward.
Lou, it happens.
Yeah, but I. Pardon me.
It happens.
Well, it. This guy got so swept up, and I have to think the judge did too, swept up in this Me Too craze that they thought, you know, we can just run roughshod over these fairly basic constitutional principles. And in any event, I thought this was a travesty.
Lou, real quick, let me interrupt for a second. I testified in a expert witness. This is years ago, and I at some point. The NASD and the SEC, well, the NASD and the SEC were like they were the enforcement arms of the securities laws, right? So, because the exchanges were in it, and the SEC was in it, and the NASD was an exchange. So, they kicked all this, somehow or another, they kicked this all to FINRA and made it a for-profit, like, go-after-people group, which to this day, I can't understand. But the Supreme Court, at one point, or somebody, some court, it told the SEC you can't go after essentially brokers and stuff. It was either 5 years or 7 years. I think it was five. So I was the case I was testifying on, somebody had traded for somebody and they lost a bunch of dough, and I charged them a lot of commission. But there was a settlement. They gave sort of like what you're talking about with Cosby, same thing. So the guy gives the lady like $250,000, and she says that's okay. Well, when FINRA gets involved, they hear about it. and they said, we're reopening this case. The 5 years doesn't, but it's now 6 years, right? They say, well, the 5 years doesn't apply to us. We're not the exchanges. We're not the SEC. We're like a subsequent group. Where the rules to the other guy's investigation don't apply to us. And they went after this guy. Without any, basically balls out. I mean, Lou, somehow, somewhere, now, does this prosecutor, what you're talking about here is everything I've read, but of course you say it better than any of the articles I read. Are we going to ban this guy from public office? Are we going to send him a bill for this trial? Or are we just going to let him be a prosecutor somewhere else?
I don't know. The malicious, it's very hard to prove a case of malicious prosecution against a state entity, but it can be done, and it has been done. But this, I don't know whether Cosby can go after him on civil grounds. I think he might be able to, because it's a clear breach, an obvious breach of the contract that he signed with the state.
I'm not talking about Cosby. I'm talking about the Pennsylvania state legislator or governor saying, look what you cost us, you moron. What are you doing?
Oh, in that case, I don't know what the provisions are with this guy's job. I mean, he's an elected official. I think to fire him, they would have to impeach him.
Okay,
I don't know what the provisions are for that, for removal of a district attorney under those circumstances under Pennsylvania law. He did make, I don't know if you read this in the story, he did, in my opinion, do something that I thought was unconscionable and probably should result in sanctions under the state code, where he said, look, this guy got off on Cosby's been released on a technicality that has absolutely nothing to do with the facts of the case. And, I mean, if I was the Pennsylvania Supreme Court, I'd be furious at that. I believe it's sanctionable under the rules of attorney conduct, but I'm not exactly sure. In any event, my personal opinion is that is an outrageous thing for a prosecutor to do, to basically try to heap public opprobrium down on a defendant whose constitutional rights you violated, and you know, try to minimize the impact of this and the level of misconduct here. And you saw something like this in the Weinstein case, where the Harvey Weinstein case. And there were a number of procedural irregularities like this where I remember reading about it, where they allowed jurors on the panel that were vehemently biased. This, by the way, is the same kind of thing that got Mike Flynn off, or would have likely got him off if the case had gone further up the appeals process. But the other thing I wanted to point out with Cosby is this misconduct, I'll call it misconduct by the prosecutor, because that's what I think it was. This misconduct by the prosecutor cost Cosby 2 years in prison. And, you know, I mean, he's an old guy, so he doesn't have that much time left, but it cost him 2 years in prison. And my reaction to it was just, yeah, we finally get some justice here, but, and I don't want to lose sight, again, don't want to lose sight of the fact that I think it's quite likely he's guilty of what he was charged with. But in my mind, the damaging and it's just sort of the ignoring of these constitutional protections on a defendant, it far outweighs, you know, the conduct that he was alleged to have engaged in. Now, that sounds crazy if you're one of the victims.
Oh, sure.
And I get that. But the danger of having prosecutors being able to ignore, you know, sort of very basic constitutional protections, I think is much more serious. Again, that's just because I'm a lawyer, I guess, and I'm trained in the process.
I think it's not just.
I think that's much more serious.
No, don't denigrate yourself. It's not just because you're a lawyer. I don't want to see somebody. God, if I'm a movie star for years and a good looking guy, and I still have to drug people to get some action, what is wrong with that? Whatever. I got all that rubbish. I can't imagine doing that to somebody. But I, you and I, and I'm not a lawyer, but you and I have this respect for how many people since the Magna Carta, for God's sake, have died to get a system in place that protects people from onerous stuff. And you know, and even, and it doesn't work all the time. We all know that. And it should work a hell of a lot more of the time, and we all know that. But the idea now, there is nobody. I was reading some stuff last night. A couple of ladies, you know, and I should have the names here, but in big high positions, talking about this being an absolute travesty, and it doesn't matter what the law was. This guy was a slime bag, and he deserves to be in jail. In other words, damn the process. I think he's guilty. We're talking about essentially. Why don't we just get rid of the entire court system and have, you know, trial by Twitter, where people think they know something about the case and they just have an opinion on two words and lob the thing out there and just we'll vote that way. I mean, is that really where we're headed?
Well, the follow-up, yeah. The follow-up I was going to mention was the Derek Chauvin case in Minneapolis over the George Floyd killing, and I don't think that was a fair trial. The evidence, I understand what the evidence was, and I followed the evidence pretty closely. But at some point, I hope, in the appellate process, somebody's going to come down and say, look at what this jury was subjected to. Look at the pressure on these individual members. And this guy, they had this guy convicted before they heard any evidence, notwithstanding their statements. Moreover, they had at least one juror who concealed his biases from the defense team during voir dire. I mean, that's another one. And well, Harvey Weinstein.
Without going into
I thought judicial misconduct there.
Well, even without Lou going into, even without going into, you know, the George Floyd thing with the incredible feelings in there, and you know, and the fact that there's a whatever the guys. But what you're saying is he should be convicted, but it should have been moved somewhere else. I am stunned. I mean, nobody likes the guy, and I don't either, by the way. Blagojevich, the idea that the jury was 11-1, and they outed that juror. And basically, people camped on his front lawn.
It was a woman. Yeah.
Yeah. And all of a sudden, they go pick another jury in the same area. That wouldn't have happened in a Western movie, for God's sake. I mean that second jury should have.
I agree,
and so I have no issue with Blago being a sleazebag. I think he was, but that's not the point. Our issue is not to bludgeon jurors and say, by the way, if you vote against us this time, it's going to be your name with Channel 5 and 7 camped out on your lawn and going after your kids. I mean that's not the America I know. S&P futures up 175, NASDAQ futures down 21. Maybe it would be in the South. Fortunately, I didn't grow up there. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. but I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Ali, Mr. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures up 250, NASDAQ futures down 20-25. And David, maybe everybody comes back a second time and you and I will be Sunday night at the Quonset Hut stuffing baskets like we did when we were 25.
I don't think we're going to be stuffing baskets, Tom.
I don't think we could do it when we were 25. So
I could. I could do it back then.
I never saw you dunk.
It was 8-foot rim.
Oh. just saying, who would have thought after, I mean, one of the most wildest days on the floor in terms of anticipation, and wasn't that a song? Was the Krispy Kreme IPO. Remember that?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
They were going to take over the world with donuts, even though they sold nothing but donuts. They were so proud of that if you wanted to go buy something in the afternoon in this gorgeous location they bought all over the country, you had to buy donuts at 3 in the afternoon. I'm looking at that going, that's not going to work. Who the hell's going to want a donut at 3 in the afternoon? Anyway, they're actually IPOing again today after the first flared and burned, what, 30 years ago? 25?
I'll have to look up when they did.
Yeah, why don't you do that there? Because they're coming public again. Who'd have thunk that, David? Right. Anyway, Dow futures up 18. Over in Europe, we've got, now again, we're talking about holiday weekend we're piling up to here. DAX down 24.1%, FTSE up 38.5%. CAC around up 1, let's call that flat. So they're, I guess, mixed them that much over there, as we can see. Nikkei down 84.3%, Shanghai down 2, that's flat. Hang Seng down 166.6. So, a little bit down there. Yesterday is Dow was up 210. A couple of stacks in there were most of that. Boeing had bounced back a little bit. Caterpillar was up. S&P was up 5. NASDAQ was down 24. So a little bit of a mixed bag other than the Dow. Bonds today 1.48, up 3 basis points, but they're at the same spot they were yesterday morning. Bund, a minus 0.18, and the Japan positive 0.03. They're actually down 3 basis points, which is interesting, going back towards 0 from being up. Oil, however, up $1.65. It's over 2%. 75.12. We haven't seen that in this country in a while. Brent, 75.97. Now, again, take a look at that. That spread is now 83 cents, which is the narrowest we've seen in how long, David? The spread between Brent and West Texas?
Yeah, it's been quite a while.
A long time. Natural gas up 6 cents, 371. RBOB up 2 cents, 227. Probably going to go higher with this oil up this much. So you're not going to get gas under $3 unless you're
yeah, it's $3.55 now.
Yeah, it's I got $3.09 last weekend in the burbs.
Not anymore, my friend. $3.55.
Okay. Well, that's the holiday weekend price. Because somebody said there was a gas shortage somewhere. So whatever. Gold up $5, $17.76. Silver up $17, $26.36. Copper unchanged at $4.28. And our favorite crypto, Bitcoin, down $1,240, $33,531. We have first traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, 6:38 in Chicago. Weather is going to be a nice day today. Currently, it's 67 and partly cloudy. Hopefully, no more rain. It's supposed to be 70 and mostly sunny in the state today. For our Phoenix listeners, 85 and fair, and they're going to have top out at 106 today and sunny. Traffic, normal buildup on the Kennedy and Eisenhower due to the long-term construction. We do have an accident on the right shoulder. at the Bishop Ford West before 137th Street traffic stop and go. And also the right lane's blocked on I-57 at Halstead Street due to overnight shooting. In sports, NBA, Suns advanced to the first NBA final since 1993, beating the Clippers 130-103. Stanley Cup Finals.
Was that Chris Paul good enough last night or what?
Yeah, he had 41. Nice game. Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay leads series 2-0, beating Montreal 3-1 last night. In baseball, the Cubs lose 15-7 to the Brewers. Needed off day today for them. Sox beat up on the Twins 13-3. They got a 1-10 start today. Diamondbacks lose 7-4 to the Cardinals. In College World Series, Mississippi State wins its first College World Series in school history, defeating Vanderbilt 9-0. Back to you, Chief.
How do you score 7 in the top of the first and then get shut out the rest of the way if you blow the starter out of the water?
You walk 4 guys in a row. I think that's how you started.
How do the Cubs not score again?
They got some problems right now.
Yeah, I get. Just so you know, I get this thing yesterday. I won't give any names here, but I get this stuff from time to time because we don't really raise money for people. I get a thing from a lady here who's acting like she's my best girlfriend. I haven't heard of her. But she wants me to introduce her to a whole bunch of people that she knows I know, which, of course, I'm not going to do. This is an outfit. They're a nationally federally chartered digital bank. Lou, what the hell is that? Is there such a thing? They claim they're only one of 4 OCC-approved digital banks with a federal charter, and the only one approved for custody, trading, lending, and issuance of digital currencies. Who the hell? What is there? I mean, am I that far behind the times? It's approved for fiat custody, digital asset custody, exchange, digital asset lending, and digital asset issuance. Am I that much in the dark, Lou? Have you ever heard anything like this?
No, and I'm kind of surprised, but because I thought the action against Bitcoin would take a slightly different form, but perhaps this is part of the strategy. So, do they process when they say digital currency? Are they also processing the what do they refer to them as, the digital tokens?
I have no idea. I never heard anything like this. But they want money.
Huh.
So they want dough, right? So
yeah.
I think I'm not going to send any. But I have no idea. It is amazing the entire infrastructure that has grown up around something that has. We're essentially inventing stocks to trade. I mean, it's one thing to have an alternative currency based on something that speaks to the fact that the countries are doing the best they can to drive their own currencies down the rabbit hole. I mean, which we're doing here. I mean, we're talking about, you know, every week we're pouring money into the system, which all really does is debase the currency. Well, it doesn't surprise me that somebody's going to say in 10 years, even if we make it 10 years, that somebody's going to want to pay people in something other than else because it's dollar and euro dollar and yen are going to be worth nothing. That, I mean, I can see somebody seeing that. I hope they're wrong. But they have like 15 of them out there that people trade every day. I mean, they're like stocks with no companies. And now there's places. Well, I mean, it's sort of like borrowing money to buy tulips on the exchanges in Holland back in the 1600s. I mean,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Would you mind taking us through? I just saw this thing yesterday. The thing that popped my head up. We have not talked for a while. This Skaggs. Tyler Skaggs' lawsuit against the Angels. Is it the Angels? I think it is the Angels, but he must be because I'm reading it in the Los Angeles Times. He essentially claims he got some oxycodone from the team when he was injured, and so 4 or 5 other people got it, and essentially the guy, I don't know if he committed suicide or what the hell he did, but anyway, he's dead. So But whatever happened to that Bears lawsuit with Keith Van Horn and Jim McMahon? What happened to that lawsuit where the Bears were giving out those kinds of drugs to players and they sued the Bears?
I have not seen anything on that, and I actually looked for that last week because I was talking to somebody about that case. I have not seen anything on it. I don't know what is happening with discovery. I mean, I assume that it's been tied up in preliminary motions of, you know, statute of limitations and, you know, whether they've got the right parties and whether they're in the right venue. But I just haven't seen the kind of movement on that, because when that thing first came out, I just thought this was an incredibly dangerous case for the NFL, and especially for the NFL team physicians, because it was really aimed at the doctors who'd been prescribing it, and that was the leverage. I mean, you go after these guys' licenses and for prescribing or for issuing. They weren't even prescribing it. They were just issuing prescription medicines without proper documentation. And all of a sudden, you could turn these people as witnesses for whatever purposes you want to say, yeah, the teams were telling us to do this, and the whole NFL was basically in on it. The Skaggs case, as I understand it, is basically that this guy was the pitcher was being prescribed drugs by the team that effectively got him addicted, and then once they got him, and that the team was aware of this, and once they got him hooked on this, they didn't take the steps to mitigate it, and they continued to allow him to have unrestricted access to people who were giving him these medications, and that's what killed him.
Well, isn't that what happened to Brett Favre? He didn't die, but he got out of it.
Happen to Brett Favre.
Yes.
Well, look, he was hooked on
prescription painkillers for a while.
I'm not going to expect you in the time we have left here, but to go through this, because this would be a Lou class that probably would take a couple hours. It'd be very interesting, by the way. I'm befuddled ever since you've been a guest and a good friend. I can't pick up, even though you've explained it 100 times very well, the idea of the combination, how this all meshes together between statutes of limitations, union rights, the collective bargaining agreement, things that people bargain away even though they're not at the table. I don't see how you have a statute of limitations and mesothelioma when it takes 25 years to ferment in your body. How does somebody put a statute of limitations on 7 years on a disease that takes 20 years to show up? The law's got to move a little on that one, but I don't, I mean, one of my, you know, I was sure by the time he was older, I knew him so long ago, but for a while I was pretty good buddies with Doug Buffone when he was on the trading floor. And Doug, we'd go to breakfast, and he would always, Tom Tracy, Dr. J, me, and Doug Buffone would go to breakfast, maybe 4 days a week. It was a great time in life, good people, and John's fun to be around, Tracy's a good guy, but Doug was, he'd always kind of hold court, and he'd talk about how many drugs he's getting from the Bears. Every game, and had the 1 year that they prohibited the home team doctor from giving out drugs, that was the year when all you had to do was bet the home team, because the visitors showed up without the drugs and the home team had them and they always won. Whatever year it was like 67 or something, 68, and of course Doug dies and he's got this nasty thing with they sent his brain out there and it turns out he was a mush. His brain was, he wasn't. And in his last couple years of his life that he had to, when he was on the score, if he was going to be on for an hour, he would spend hours writing down notes on legal pads and then, writing them over and over again so he'd remember for his half hour or hour and he was going to be on. And, you couldn't have been a nicer guy, and I just felt awful when I was reading that. But how does a new union bargain away Doug's rights when I don't think there even was a union in 65 when these guys were handing him the drugs? How does this all work? I mean, I know it's a longer conversation, but how do you get to bargain away somebody's stuff when they're not even there and they're already gone?
Well, okay, so number one, the collective bargaining agreement with the NFL and the Players Association, and there was a Players Association in 65. It was a kind of a pet union, but a toothless union. But there was a Players Association then. The collective bargaining agreement is an agreement between current employees and the employer. And that's all it's between. You can look up the quote by Gene Upshaw, who famously said back in the 90s when somebody said, you know, we need to take care of our retirees, our retired players. And Upshaw said, no, we don't. We don't deal with retired players. We don't owe them anything. And that, I mean, it was a brutal statement, but it was absolutely correct. So factoring these guys in the negotiations is basically an act of grace by both the employers and the union that's involved. Now, they did it because of publicity. They did it because they recognize that pro football is entertainment, and you know the public going to watch these games wants to at least believe that these guys are taking care of, the clubs are taking care of these older players who have been injured in service to this entertainment business. Okay, so that's bottom line number one. They could write out anybody they wanted, and you know, my father was an example. My father had CTE when, you know, after they determined after he had passed, but he was ineligible for NFL benefits because they did a cutoff and said, if you don't play X number of games over the course of X number of years, you are ineligible to receive these benefits, and we really don't care what your circumstance was. That they draw lines, and that's what happens in these kinds of situations. You end up drawing lines, much like the race norming that we talked about a couple of weeks ago with the concussion standard. They needed to draw a line because they didn't have data. They needed to draw a line for a baseline for what somebody was like when they were playing football versus what they're like now. And so the insurance people or the actuarial people who were making these calls started drawing lines using baseline data for you know, average people of you know, a particular race and age and whatever, and put those lines in. This is normal in trying to deal with these wide-ranging problems of things like asbestos contamination or exposure to some chemical or, in our case, a career in football.
Blue, how do you...
And you know, you could say, how do they get to do it? They get to do it because... Again, because it's an act of they didn't have to do anything. The players NFL could have agreed, we're not touching this.
See,
these guys are on their own.
Here's the difference between how an astute lawyer thinks and how I think. That's why I'd never be a lawyer. You're capable of separating the two things we're talking about, which is what you need to do in court, obviously, and talk about whether or not people are covered by this thing. What I'm saying is you can't divorce the fact that Herb Adderley, for instance, or Doug or whoever it was, you can't divorce the fact that Herb Adderley had to cash in his pension to pay for his knee injury that he had to get operated on because he couldn't walk and he's out in the street from the fact that some Packer doctor probably shot him up with cortisone 15 times in 1 year. And he had no idea how bad his knee was. You can't divorce the two. I mean, one's a felony, for God's sake, Lou. The allegations. Mayor Daley said, "Who are these alligators?" In the Bear case, was that Keith Van Horn went to the doctor and they prescribed essentially an oxycodone, right? And the Bear said, "Oh my God, what did you do? We've already ordered your allotment for the year." They ordered the allotment of everybody on the team and had a big bowl of it and gave them out to whoever they wanted.
Yeah, I think it was Toradol, but yeah.
So,
he went to his private physician and the doctor came back and said, "I can't prescribe any more for you because you've already used your prescription allotment for the entire year." Horn's going, "No, I haven't." And the physician goes, "Well, somebody's filed a formal document indicating that you've been prescribed, you know, the maximum amount that we can prescribe for you for the year.
But Lou, I don't get the connection here.
The Bears.
And I know what I'm missing here is, you know, you talk terrifically about this subject, that subject, and next subject. Now, general manager for, if you want to call it, the knuckleheads, I had my softball team for 40 years. Now, I'm sure that somebody somewhere on the team has a shoulder or a knee or something that's worse because he played softball. Okay, but he enjoyed doing it and liked going out afterward, God knows what. That's a lot different than if somebody showed up and said, hey, Chief, I don't think I can play tonight. And I said, wait a minute, I got a guy here to shoot you something in your knee. You'll be good to go. I mean, I never did that. So the liability that I have in a recreational sport is a lot different from some team that starts shooting a guy's knee up or North Dallas 40, take the shot, which is they use Novocaine, right? And all of a sudden you go out there and tear the thing up. Well, the liability just grew. I mean, I just did a felony, for God's sake, Lou. I mean, and these guys are not treated like people.
But it's a question. It's a question of, you know, did you catch it at the time? You know, again, football is an act between consenting adults. Okay, did you catch this at the time? Did you make a complaint about it? Did you go to the Workers' Compensation Commission and file a claim? Did you make some kind of legal reference to protect your rights? And if you didn't, and the short answer is, the league actively worked to sort of obfuscate that right. If you didn't, then you may not have a remedy at law. It may not be fair, but you may not have a remedy. And a huge amount of what's happening with NFL players off the field and away from the union and the union and the NFLPA and the NFL is trying to remedy situations where the players should have, you know, stepped up or are stepping up, trying to assert rights that the league simply doesn't want to admit are there. And that's the fight. And they're trying to do this retrospectively. And you noted when we talked about the concussion issue a while back about the race norming, you noted that how do you go back and separate out the concussions that players received when they were in high school from the ones they received in college and the brain damage that they got as a result of that versus, you know, what happened when they went into the NFL? And the short answer is it's really tough. And if the clubs, and this is what's going to happen on this Tyler Skaggs case, you know, he's trying to say that the club put him in contact with a guy that they knew was using drugs with him and was supplying him, and that's the reason he died, and that's the reason his income stream was cut off. You know, the baseball's going to come out and just go, this guy was a druggie. And we can't be held responsible for the fact that he willingly, injected himself with or took substances that were illegal, and he did it knowingly, and he's a bad guy. And that's how that case is going to get, that's how that case is likely to be tried. Well, I mean, it's really funny. One of the things that the plaintiff's counsel is saying is, well, I hope the California Angels aren't going to follow a scorched earth policy here. And I'm going, well, buddy, you're accusing them of facilitating drug addiction to the extent that it killed one of their players. So you've already lit that fire. The earth is already being scorched by your allegation. So why wouldn't the club come back and just basically tear this kid apart a situation where he can't defend himself? That's the kind of litigation that's going on right now, and it gets really messy because you can't, a lot of it is after the fact claims. Now, the Bears drug addiction case and the misuse of prescription meds case, a little bit different because there ought to be records on that, and they can reach back and track that. But even then, you may have a huge statute of limitation problem. The concussion lawsuit that was developing between the NFL and its insurers. And I assume that's been settled because I haven't seen anything on that lately. But that case involves you know, the NFL paid out a huge amount of money, billions of dollars, for this concussion fund that was going to compensate players for their injuries. They then promptly turned around and made claims against their insurance company for this amount. The insurance companies came back and said, wait a minute, time out. We think you guys knew about this risk and did not advise your insurance companies so that they could adequately assess the risk and charge you the proper premium. And so the insurance companies are now, were as of about a year ago, were going after the NFL and filing a lawsuit in response to the NFL's claim for these damages, filing a lawsuit that allowed them to go in and get discovery on the NFL as to what did you know and when did you know it. And again, the idea being there's at least some colorable evidence reaching back into the early 1990s that the NFL knew that its players were suffering significant brain damage as a result of playing and did not advise the insurance companies that this risk to their players was sitting out there.
What a tangled web we weave, huh, Lou? Lou, we got a dash play. Interesting stuff, boy. If you were teaching a class, I'd be there from front to back, boy. I tell you, this stuff is so amazing to me.
That's highly nice. I'm just glad I'm not I hope I'm not confusing the listeners, but they'll tell us.
Well, you know what? At some point, with all this stuff, if it's complicated, Lou, it's complicated. You gotta pony up and listen, right? I mean, that's just the way it is. One thing affects another. I mean, it just S&P futures up 7, NASDAQ futures down 4. Lou, enjoy your weekend. Be safe.
You too, sir.
And we'll be right back, Mr. Dangenatis.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body, too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Well, I'm not back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm talking about Stamps Cantina on the board. We have Mr. Dan Janinas. I always have an interesting question I start out with Dan. Happened. Dan, if you were going to have a company that was going to go on the New York Stock Exchange or whoever and be national news, would you want your ticker symbol to be D-Nut?
Yeah. Well, it certainly will get some attention, huh?
It certainly
catch people's eyes. So.
The term has been used a lot on this show, and it has nothing to do with donuts. So. just saying.
That's great.
Well, how are you? Happy 4th?
Yeah, happy 4th to you as well. I'm actually on the road visiting some companies and clients, and it's good to get out again and actually see the companies face-to-face rather than on a Zoom call. So it's been a productive trip. one of the names that I was thinking about to you guys is one of the names that I think is really a good, again, yield story in here where we're looking for yield still, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to find. SWM, which is a company that focuses on a number of different businesses, but primarily filtration, as in water filtration, air filtration, and anything related to the medical community that involves filtration. In fact, that's the area of growth for them, the medical side, with an acquisition that they made in April. And they also do protective films, like for automobiles to protect the paint, you know, from the weather and all that, and that's been a good business for them as well. But they pay, their dividend pays 4.5%. Their motto or their logo right now is dividends and deleveraging, which is our style. We like that. So it's a good story. I think there's more improvement from here. And it's a, you know, great management team, and it's always good to see them face to face. Another name that I saw yesterday is, that we've mentioned in the past, is Aztec. Ticker symbol ASTE. And while they're not a dividend play, they are an infrastructure play. So they do what they, their slogan now is rock to road. So they do basically anything to do with, you know, they own asphalt plants, but they also own, you know, concrete ready mix. They make pavers, you know, the actual machines that do road paving, you know, crushing of rocks all the way to, you know, paving the roads. So they're benefiting from the infrastructure play. They're benefiting from this, you know, demographic that's moving to areas that are less developed, you know, say in the U.S. And, you know, as I've mentioned before, in my area, we're seeing a huge amount of growth in terms of infrastructure. And certainly, you know, the infrastructure bill, which is a big, you know, on everyone's mind, I really believe it's going to pass. I think it's going to be sooner rather than later, at least on what we really need in terms of, you know, roads and bridges and you know, IT infrastructure, if you will, getting the, you know, the internet connection and all that more up to speed and certainly more competitive with the rest of the world. So it's, you know, again, been a productive trip. Certainly, I think the face-to-face meetings are a lot more productive than the ones over Zoom, but it's, you know, hopefully we're kind of getting past all the COVID days and moving into a more normal pace again here. So it's good to be part of that.
Dan, do you think you would hope that with this kind of money coming out, I need guys like you on the show because where I sit in Chicago, I get an amazingly jaundiced, hopefully jaundiced view. It better not be like this everywhere. View of what the hell's going on in the world. And I look at this Jane Byrne Interchange, which is a massive project here. It's going to be 12 years, and it's going to be like quadruple budget. And there's 40 guys working on it. When I get here, there's nobody working. When I leave, there's nobody working. I've never seen anything like it. Nobody's being put to work. It's the same two or three firms that get every job, and they probably have 15 jobs stacked up after that. Nobody's hurrying. Nobody's hiring. Tell me that's not what's going on everywhere else, because
absolutely not what's going on everywhere else, because literally being on the road myself, just you see in construction and activity, road construction and activity everywhere. I'm here in Chattanooga, and you're seeing is road construction. And it's not just road construction that would benefit, for example, Aztec, the company I mentioned. They also benefit from, you know, communities and home, you know, neighborhoods and all of that, you know, for the private sector. And there's a lot of booming in that area as well. So, yes, absolutely. You're going to see a lot more going outside of the big cities, you know, certainly outside of like the New Yorks and Chicago's. You're going to see a lot more activity. And you're also seeing, like I said, we see in Florida a lot of movement from the big cities, especially in the Northeast and the Midwest. And people are, you know, as people move and, you know, the focus has been, you know, the highway bill is certainly helped, but the focus a good part of the country has been on this continued build out. And, I think what you're seeing there is unique.
What
is sort of less common, if you will.
Dan, what is the basis of I mean, taking everything together. I mean, I know you have some of these companies, and obviously I love the fact you actually go see these guys now. Although you got to be sticker shock every time you go in a gas station. But
the travel part is definitely increased, and it seems like everyone's on the road, although part of that is the holiday week.
Of course, when you pull into the station and you have a driver, do you even look at the price, or do you just let the driver take care of it?
Well, usually I'm the driver, so I do look at the price. It's not, you know, I guess in the end when you there is a little bit of sticker shock, but you know when you're comparing that to what you know you might have paid for a rental car, and in, I know at least in Boston where I'll end up this week, the rental cars were $1,000 a week. So
wow.
Again, that may be a temporary. Hopefully, will be a temporary situation, but. You know, I think you can still, depending on where you're flying, I think you can get a relatively good price. Hotels are still relatively, you know, you're not seeing crazy pricing in hotels yet. But again, that all depends on your destination. But in the road, yeah, absolutely. You know, there's no question. It's the same thing in the grocery store, right? Or at the restaurants, you know, that you're definitely seeing higher prices, so.
Dan, you're mentioning that, you know, the building is going on in Florida and in some of the suburban areas here as well. I look at all these numbers and when they all mash up, because that's why, you know, again, I like talking to people from different parts of the, it seems to me that, Carl will be on tomorrow, we'll talk about the labor numbers. It's the first time with the last 2 years we haven't had like any increase in population, you know, pretty much anywhere countrywide. And obviously there's people skedaddering all over the place because of stay at home and get out of some cities and all this kind of stuff, which, well, I tell you what, talk about sticker shock. The people here in Chicago now that have been told, hey, you're getting back to work in September, the kids are going back to school. There's people, they must have been watching TV too much. They think they're living in Wisconsin from now to forever, and it's not happening. I mean, they're being told to come back, and they're not happy. But what I'm saying, I guess, is the building and the housing, now granted, we have housing stock needs to be replaced, it's probably behind being replaced like anything else, but are we talking about a zero-sum game here? That every gain you're getting in Florida, you're losing in Peoria, or you're losing in some other place.
Yeah.
I mean,
I think probably you're right. In fact, that's something I've been thinking about as well is the population issue. Part of it also depends on the age group. I mean, the baby boomers, which are our age group, you know, I think we're still a large part of the population, and the attention's really been focused on millennials who are moving to the more affordable parts of the country where they maybe can work remotely. Or find jobs or maybe bring new business to some of these smaller cities. So there's the, you know, the quality of life move. And I think in terms of just the mass numbers, they're, you know, a large part of the country is benefiting from that. You know, the people, whether it be the millennial age or, you know, the baby boomer age that are moving to these places that are, you know, providing better qualities of life, you know, certainly lower cost of living. And, you know, that I think that's a positive thing. For our not only for our economy but really for sort of spreading out the wealth, if you will, in the country. And but you're right, yeah, it's not necessarily coming from population, and there are places that are losing people. So, but it may not be a bad thing.
Well, I often wondered that when you have now United Airlines, you know, buried in the fine print. You know, of course, I could go into how those guys still have money enough to buy jets. I have no idea. You know, whatever. Yeah. We could. Dan, you and I, we could hoist a few adult beverages over that one, but let's just say when you notice the selection of jets that they're buying, even though they're buying the bigger 737s, they're still 737s, and they're kind of going to increase like these regional hubs to the point where one of the reasons why you can say all you want about I want to live in Omaha because it's a great place to live. Guess what? You can't have a business that's flying 50 people out to see companies from Omaha. It ain't happening. I mean, how Procter & Gamble's still in Cincinnati, I have no idea. I mean, until Southwest got there, you couldn't get there from here. And unless they had some kind of spectacular deal. Yeah, but unless they had a great deal with American and United, how the hell Boeing moved to Chicago because they can't fly to places out of Seattle, right? I mean, I don't know how you... Does that mean that the airlines are going to be more competitive and service these other areas? I mean, every time you and I talk about a subject, 15 other subjects fall out the bottom that they kind of have to go with, right?
Yeah, no, but actually that is the movement. There's, you know, I live in Punta Gorda and we have our own airport, and they just announced, you know, nonstop, you know, two more nonstop flights to probably the Midwest, I think Minneapolis and Springfield, Illinois, but they're, you know, they've moved into flying to Texas now, and these low cost carriers have kind of done the small city to small city routes that have been left behind. So there, yeah, there absolutely is, and there are some airlines that are sort of ahead of the game there, and taking advantage of the, you know, the ability for people to fly small, you know, nonstop from small city to small city rather than having to go through the hubs like Atlanta, Dallas, Chicago. You know, you're able to fly there nonstop now, and I think that, you know, that allows the, you know, the business travel, if you will, to continue, you know, and the personal travel, the recreational travel to continue as well. So that, yeah, that is absolutely a movement in the airline space.
Why the hell would anybody want to go to Springfield?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But you know, people that had, you know, that had, a lot of people stayed in Florida longer this year, this season. So maybe people who are going home, you know, people going up north to, I don't know, I'm not sure you're getting away from the heat to go up north these days. But
well, what's the flight name, like Lobbyist One or what? From did you ever have the pleasure, or, you know, I'm saying probably was pleasure because it was ski resorts and so forth. Did you ever have the pleasure of landing at Denver and Salt Lake and feeding out to the airplanes that go to all the other little towns out there? Did you ever do that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Wasn't it? I mean, I can't believe just the view of it. I mean, I don't even know if they still do that, or they probably do. But David, I don't know if you ever did it, but you land in Denver. Was that Denver or Salt Lake? I did both of them. But you land there, and all of a sudden you take this huge run through the Denver airport because it's like totally opposite side of the place.
Right.
And you walk outside. I think there had to be 25 to 35 of these smaller props and jets, one going to Vernal, Utah, one going to Steamboat, one going to... It's unbelievable. Right. Everybody feeds into those things, and then off you go. I mean, I don't know. Are you ever going to get to a spot where somebody flies from Chicago to Vernal, Utah? I doubt it. I mean, you're going to have to go someplace,
right? But some of the smaller airlines are flying nonstop from smaller cities.
Yep.
And they're not flying every day of the week. You know, so they're, you know, it's kind of creating the, you know, the ability to travel. You know, make it more of an efficient trip. You know, not having, you know, both cost wise as well as time wise. So it's been it's definitely been the movement in the industry to you know, small city to small city, and especially those places, like, I'm sure in the wintertime they have, you know, they would increase their number of flights, but...
Well, I went to Toronto in business, I don't know if it's had to be 15 years ago, and they had one little outfit, actually it was a big carrier, but for some reason they flew this tiny little jet out of Midway that landed in the downtown Toronto airport. God, was that thing convenient.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's been a positive trend in the industry, that despite, you know, they have a lot of headwinds right now with oil, you know, with fuel costs and now labor. You know, I know a number of the airlines, and I think Southwest has been in the news for this, for just actually even having trouble finding pilots. So there's going to have to be some incentive. And, you know, as we've talked before, and this is what I've heard from both companies, and it's pretty much what I'm hearing across the board, the labor issue is still a big issue for pretty much everyone. You know, trying to take some clients out in Atlanta and go into a part of town and, you know, seeing like four or five restaurants in the area are closed that normally have done good business in the past, and they have signs on the door saying we can't find help. So I think there is going to be this labor shortage issue. There's going to be this wage inflation issue that's going to continue. In my belief, you know, because there's been a lot of back and forth on this, is it transitory inflation or not? Well, it might be transitory in terms of, say, rental cars or used cars. You know, those prices may come down, but once people start getting higher wages, they're not going to take a pay cut. So,
well, nobody's going to work for $10 an hour now in a city.
And exactly. So to try to get people back to work, I think, is still going to be a challenge, and companies are having to pay incentives and bonuses and all that. And I'm hearing that from pretty much all the companies we do business with. Now, some companies are able to pass through those costs to their customers. But I do think when we talk about inflation and whether it's here to stay, I believe that it is. Because, again, going back to pre-COVID, that's what we were looking for. We were looking for that part of the cycle where you see higher interest rates, where you see some inflation, and where you see wages. And wages were the one area that we were watching very closely, and now that's happening. And it's not bad. You know, when we have growth in the economy and there's a little bit of inflation, that's not a bad thing. We just don't want to see any kind of quick, rapid movements. We want to see this to be sort of gradual over time. So it's so I think that's something to continue to pay attention to going forward. I know the supply chain issues, I think, are temporary, but I don't think the wage issues are temporary.
I'm going to say, just my as you know, I study this more than most, Dan, and by the way, it all does is aggravate me, so I really should stop. If you go back and do any sort of a wage versus price thing, whether you go back 10 years, 12 years to the 2008 fiasco, make that 13 now, or go back to 2000 or even earlier, go back to 1980, and you look at wages versus prices of just about anything, you can take the CPI and take it to the can with you next time you go. I mean, it's not even on the same planet of
right.
what people. I mean, I'll be real brief here, but when I was working at Pullman in 1977 or 8, if you worked on an assembly line, well, it wasn't a line, but if you're a guy working on a railroad car, a guy or a lady, because we had ladies, and I'm saying you could probably. You could get to 20 grand a year, maybe with a little overtime. All right. And a house was 45, a car was 4,500, Notre Dame education was 4 grand. And now that same person on that line is making 45, maybe, and that's a, maybe even, not if he's starting out, he's not. And a house is 250, Notre Dame education 70, a car is 30. I mean, we're not even close.
Right.
So, I mean, you could give all these people, the median wage that's still $36,000, $38,000, which, well, $20 an hour is $40,000, right? So it's, the median is what, $18 an hour. You could make that, $25, much less $10, and you're only going back to 2007. You're not even beginning to go back to 1980 or 2000 in terms
right,
of.
Right, and if you go back even further, it's even more extreme.
Yeah,
so
more extreme.
The multiple effect, if you will, you know, might have been one times, even when, like in my father's era, where I think his first salary out of law school was about the same as what he paid for the house that,
yeah.
You know, the first house that they bought. And then there's absolutely no way that's going to happen in today's world. You know, that there's, you know, that multiple effect might be three or four or five times, you know, to get to the same kind of house, if you will, to be able to say that. So I totally agree with you on that. And there has to be some catching up. You know, that so it's bound to happen. I mean, it's really bound to happen. It's a direction that I think we're moving in and that maybe we need to move in, I think, and that will be also in the end very good for the economy.
If you look, I'll shut up after this one, but if you look at the, even the stuff we'll go over tomorrow with Carl, because he does it better than me, has better charts. If you look at the amount of people that are still, quote, not back to work, and everybody blames the people sitting on a sofa. If you take the amount of restaurants and places and businesses that have shut down from COVID, there's plenty of people that are available. They just, for some reason, people feel it's their right to pay somebody the same price they paid last February. The world has changed, my friend. No,
right.
Nobody's working for that. I mean, you know, you can't get to work for that. With the used car prices up 17% in 2 months. The tolls are up. Everything's up. What are you doing? I mean, I don't know how you even try and put those numbers together. Yet that's what's on TV. If you ask anybody why somebody can't hire somebody, well, man, they're sitting home doing nothing. Okay. Do you know 50 people that are doing that, or you just hear somebody mouthing on TV? Well, yeah, no, everybody's too lazy to work. Work for $10. They might work for 15. I mean, you see the Walmart guy going, we're going to raise all our people from 10 to 11. What did the girl say in Caddyshack? Tanks for nothing?
I mean, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to believe that small, you know, small amount is going to make a difference. What I will say is, you know, a couple of the companies I've talked to recently have, you know, they've done their own studies on sort of the entry level positions. And if you're talking to go from $10 to $15 an hour, the impact of that is so minimal on a company. You know, it's the higher waged workers that are gonna, you know, it's gonna have a more significant impact on, and those are the ones we don't hear about in the press as much. You know, you hear people can relate to retail and that's what they see every day. But, you know, you're talking about, you know, a pharmacist or a pilot or somebody that's in that sort of, you know, the next range up that's gonna be, you know, making a six figure income that still is not making enough to make it worth their while to go on. I think the other thing that's happened too, in you know, people in our age group, the baby boomer age group, have used this as an opportunity to retire. So they've actually stepped out of
right.
the labor pool altogether. And I think as you mentioned before, you're right. You know, in terms of the generation behind us is much smaller. So the people who were there aren't as many people that come into those positions. So the period of COVID, I think, was one where a lot of people transitioned. And I know I have friends that are both cops and also people that were in our industry that chose this time as a good time to, you know, to take their retirement and, you know, and kind of move on to the next step, maybe physically relocate and kind of get, you know, move into their retirement mode. So there's a lot of that's happening as well. And I think on the younger end and sort of more the entry-level positions, there's kind of a joke that hiring people, we hire analysts and interns, and, you know, they can be a lot more selective and, you know, a very different environment than when we grew up, when we were happy to have a job working for a good company. So that will hopefully change as companies pay them a little more attention and understand that this part of their business is really important, how they incentivize people, whether it's just going to be a base salary or maybe other benefits that they can have as well. But yeah, I guess it's, you know, the companies that I've been talking to will say it's a good problem to have. You know, it's better to have a problem on the supply side than the demand side. And if it means raising wages, that they'll do it. They have to do it. They're not going to have a choice. But I agree with you. You know, why if, you know, the choice isn't shutting your business down. The choice is maybe, you know, kind of looking at your balance sheet and looking at your expenses and trying to find a better way to do business.
Are you guys having to go into, you're about, you know, the people not matching up to the jobs. Well, I don't think, this is going back, you know, we're talking about a company that was 1860, for God's sake, but at Pullman, they never expected a welder to show up that they didn't have to train. They wanted them to know how to weld the Pullman way. I mean, are the people you're talking to saying, well, the first 2 months we're training people our way and we end up, you know, there's a lot to be said for that because the people are kind of locked into you after you train them.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. And I think the companies that are, you know, the companies that are well managed will provide training programs and, you know, on the job training and all that. And I think that's really important. It also kind of goes to one thing that we look at, which is sort of the corporate culture. So, you know, a new person coming into a company, you know, a professional level, I think needs to learn about that company first and not only their job and, you know, how they're trained, but also kind of get an understanding of, you know, sort of the culture and, you know, the strategic vision and what the goal is. And I'm finding more companies having these mission statements, if you will. You know, as I mentioned, Aztec, you know, having the rock to road, you know, they've centralized their company. They've consolidated their company. So people coming in and training, and they do have a training program, and they do bring people along. And you're right, once people are there, they're going to stay, and the company needs to find ways to keep them there. But I think by kind of, you know, letting them understand that company philosophy and the company mission, I think it's,
Dan, who,
you know, from day one, it's really important.
You mentioned that this, I mean, obviously, we know that this is going to be driven, even though it's happened on the local level, like you say, it's going to be driven from, you know, this money coming down from the government, or at least part of it is. Now, your guys, ASTE, when they actually do a job, when they're either selling the aggregate to somebody, or they're actually doing the laying of the aggregate themselves, who is their contract actually with? It's not going to be with the Fed, is it? The Fed gives the money to the county or the state, and the contract is with the state or the county. Who's actually their customer?
Yeah, absolutely. That would be the municipalities.
Okay.
So that would be maybe the county or even the city in some cases. But their business also goes to private. So they're, you know, that in that case it would be a home builder or be a builder that is having to build out the infrastructure of a new neighborhood. So yeah, they're not dealing with the federal level or even the state level. They're dealing with the local municipalities.
So you used to be able to go buy.
They've told me that the funding is already, you know, there's already been highway bills. You know, it's not like this is the first time that they've provided funding for that. So even though some municipalities are having issues, there's going to be, I don't know if I want to call it a mandate, but it's certainly with the new infrastructure bill coming out, there's going to be more funds that are going to be directed specifically at the build out of roads and bridges and the updating, you know, of roads. So it's not just new construction, it's also the maintenance. The maintenance, again, would go back to the municipality or back to the private builder.
Okay.
if you will.
So when we were younger, we used to, if you go by a project, there'd be a big sign there that said, you know, this thing brought to you by, you know, Cook County or somebody based on these funding, and there'd be like 15 different bills that were listed that came from the federal. So it all filters down through, if it's a county road, to the county, then he gets the bid from the county.
Yes, absolutely. Right. Okay. The county would end up becoming their customer, and then they go through a dealer distribution network, for example, just to use assets. You know, that's how they do it. So they may not be dealing, they may not be the ones who are dealing directly, with the specific people, but they are dealing with the people who are on the job, if you will, that are representing that county, that municipality. So yes, but it would not be, I would not be concerned about sort of the lack of funding, if you will, or,
okay,
the counties that have had, counties or cities that have had a lot of, financial issues, because there is money that's allocated, and some of it comes from gas tax. So the tax on gasoline is a certain portion of that gets allocated to your municipality. And the states are responsible for the road systems in their own state. So it really doesn't come, it comes from the local level.
Right. So, but if it's on the interstate, then somehow that probably trickled from the Fed.
Yeah. I mean, eventually that's, you're right. Eventually that's, I think, what would happen on the interstates, but there's still,
yeah,
within each state, the state is responsible for their road systems. And then again, within the cities and the counties, that responsibility kind of keeps getting pushed down. And it works out well because of, you know, the taxes that are there that are going to continue to pay, you know, for this,
right,
again, gasoline tax, for example. So it's you know, their funding issue is not a problem. Their problem right now is demand issue, you know,
yeah,
too much demand and not quite enough supply yet.
So. All right, bud, thank you very much. Hey, good luck on that Billy. I hope they find somebody alive there, but I don't know. It doesn't look good, does it?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. That's been a nightmare. But,
oh, God.
Thank you, and happy 4th of July to you.
Yeah, you too. Enjoy yourself, and don't get too crazy when you pull into a gas station. It's more expensive than it was an hour ago, you know.
Exactly.
S&P Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures down 16. Be right back, Mr. John Flanagan.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and try to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Hi, I'm Audrey Johnson, owner of Home Source Realty and frequent contributor to Stocks and Jocks radio show. If you're thinking about purchasing real estate this summer, could be a good time to shop around. Whether you're a novice or seasoned investor, low interest rates and good inventory make adding bricks and mortar investment to your portfolio an interesting possibility. Many a great fortune has begun with the purchase of property. Call me today for your personal investment consultation, and I would be happy to get you started on your path to prosperity. You can reach me at AudreyJohnson@Realtor.com or call me at 708-349-3456. That's 708-349-3456.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Dave Scatina on the board. S&P futures up 6. The NASDAQ futures down 7. Dow's up 85. Individual stocks. And Boeing up $2. They got that big United order this week. I'm curious. We'll ask John when he comes on here. Or David. Have they sold the plane, the 400 planes that were sitting on the ground? Is somebody buying the Euro planes? Or are they shipping those off to like Ethiopia or someplace? I mean, is that...
I haven't read about that yet, Tom.
Yeah, they've been pretty silent on that, haven't they?
Yes. I mean,
seems to indicate that the United wants, like, new planes, not those. But,
right.
But I'm not so sure about that. Over in Europe, we've got... by the way, jobless claim totaled 364 versus 390 estimates, so better. But almost the exact same amount as last week was worse than estimates. So I guess we're bumping along at estimates. But 364 is better than we were, like, I think we were, what, 411 last week, David? Something like that. DAX up 48.3%. These guys have all rallied since the last time we talked about them. FTSE up 62.9, CAC around up 32.5. Matter of fact, they rallied pretty strong since the last time. That's an hour ago. Nikkei, these guys can't do anything because they're closed. Nikkei down 84.3%, Shanghai down 2, that's flat. Hang Seng down 166.6. So we got Asia and Europe going in different directions. Europe's probably rallying a little bit on this jobs number, I would guess. Although we have not. Yesterday's a wave review. Dow was up to 210. Caterpillar and Boeing were the stars. S&P up 5, NASDAQ down 24. Bonds, up 2 basis points, 147, which is right where they were yesterday. Bund, minus 0.19. Japan, positive 0.03. Oil's the big mover today, up 2.8%, up $2.06 to 75.53. We have not seen West Texas over 75 in a real long time. Brent up 168, 76.30. Natural gas up 6 cents, 371. Arbob up another 4 cents, 228. So I think you're going to get sticker shock when you pull into the station. Gold up 650 to 1778. Silver up 21 cents, 2641. Copper unchanged at 429. And our favorite crypto is Bitcoin. It's the one we talk about. I don't know if it's our favorite. Bitcoin down 1100 to 33,635, which is kind of right in the middle of the range that we've seen lately of about 29 to 36. So I don't know if it's a buyer or seller. It's kind of in the middle. David, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Good morning. 7:36 in Chicago. Today's weather is going to be a nice one in Chicago, finally. Right now it's 67, partly cloudy. We're going to get to a high of 70 with mostly sunny skies. For our Phoenix listeners, it's 85 and partly cloudy currently, reaching a high of 106 and sunny. In traffic, we got the heavy buildup on the Kennedy and Eisenhower due to the long-term construction. We have slower traffic on 55 North due to the exit ramp at I-94, the Ryan ramp. There is one accident to report. It's closed due to an investigation. Milwaukee Avenue, Route 21 between Winchester and Adler Road. In sports, NBA last night, Suns advanced their first NBA final since 1993, beating the Clippers 130-103. Stanley Cup Finals, Tampa Bay leads series 2-0, beating Montreal 3-1 last night. In baseball, the Cubs get pounded 15-7 to the Brewers. Have a welcome day off today. The Sox beat the Twins 13-3. They got a 1-10 start today. Diamondbacks lose 7-4 to the Cardinals. In the College World Series, Mississippi State wins its first College World Series in school history, defeating Vanderbilt 9-0. Back to you, Chief.
93. Hey, John, how are you?
I'm fine. Happy 4th to you.
You Dave. Too. Was Charles Barkley on that team?
I'm not sure. I could look it up.
And I'm going to say that Mississippi State had a team that came real close. They had Will Clark and Rafael Palmeiro on the same team, didn't they? At one point? I think they did.
You're dating me.
Wait a minute. Not by much.
Not by much.
Just saying, you know. Well, I mean, there was a special. I was watching the College World Series, and they were talking about that. The last time they had a great team, they had Palmeiro and Will Clark on the same team, which would have been one hell of a team, by the way. So those guys, I mean, Palmeiro's like one of not very many people that have 3,000 hits that are probably never going to be in the Hall of Fame.
100% right. Wow. Yeah,
well,
I'm pretty sure you're right.
He and Pete Rose, and I don't know what what's gonna happen to all these guys, Jan? We've been talking legal stuff with your legal compadre Lou, and it's pretty interesting how sports and economics and everything kind of really meshes up with the legal system. There really isn't any one thing that you can do that doesn't affect other stuff, right? I mean, it just seems sort of that way. And I'm kind of stunned. I mean, you obviously being, you know, a fan of college football to a certain extent anyway. You really wonder when you talk about, people being taken care of that use drugs to play sports. And the people who, I've actually, you know, because I do the show, I'm closer to this stuff by talking to Lou and everybody. You know, I'll run into some guys at the local emporium, and they'll be talking about the college playoff. You know, man, should we go to 8? Should we go to 16? Should we go to 32? And I go, hey, let's go to, you know, 128. Let's be like the NCAA basketball. Let's play to like April. Let's totally forget the part about how many of these guys now got brain problems out of college instead of even pro, and they don't even get paid, for God's sake. Nobody cares. I mean, absolutely don't care. It's like nobody cared if the gladiators died, right? I mean, it is pretty scary, John, how nobody cares about any of this stuff. I mean, I was sitting there last night, and one of my attorney buddy, who, you know, can be a pain. Anyway, he wanders up, he plunks down. I went to the club last night and stopped for a quick one, and these guys, he wanders in with four landscape lights. Of course, I immediately turn the box to where it says "Made in China," and then he's bitching that they're made out of plastic instead of stainless steel. And I go, "How much you pay for it?" He goes, $21. I go, "You have any idea how much four lights that were stainless steel would cost? It wouldn't be. What is the matter with you?" I basically said to him, "What is the matter with you? You expected a stainless steel light form for $24 from China? What planet are you on?" You know. So we got people who could care less about buying stuff from China. And I said, what about the slave laborers? Oh, yeah, I forgot all about that. I mean, we don't care if these guys that we like watching on Sunday, you know, or Saturday at college, but we don't care if they croak 5 years later. We don't care if they have a miserable life afterward. I mean, it's absolutely outstanding how much we don't care about, and yet we think we do. We say we do. I mean, or am I just being a little grumpier this morning? I'm not grumpy, but
the whole culture of it has really depended on distracting people enough to make them assume that some of this is just part of the deal. You know, don't notice the fact that the size of these players has increased astronomically, and the violence of the game as a result is much greater than it ever used to be. But that's not only just, you know, it's not incidental, it's expected, and with all the misuse of drugs and everything else. And this is kind of like, you know, the less you know about it, the better, because if you really investigated what's behind some of this stuff and why you're not supposed to notice it, that people would probably flee from the sports and everything, you know, connected to them. But it's all about detaching people enough, and frankly, you know, with the cost of buying tickets to these events and so on, the public is really kind of split up into those who can afford to really be close and upfront to stuff, and the people who are very distant from it and have very little loyalty to a sports team other than the fact that it's got the same name as the town they live in. But other than that, this is not about, you know, rooting for the home team. This is just about, you know, video game kind of stuff. These aren't even real people to a lot of the spectators anymore. I think professional sports has kind of really converted itself into something very different from what it was 50, 60 years ago.
Well, John, what is
college sports too? I mean, it's all part of the same deal, but professional sports especially.
Well, what is the mentality? And I, you know, my uncles were crazy football fans. Well, one of my uncles played professional football for 12 years. Back when there were all kinds of leagues and not just the NFL. So he played during the Depression, basically, and they scrimmaged against the Bears a few times. So they would play those guys, and you know, it was one of those things where you got, you know, $50 a game or $20 a game or whatever it was, and they would travel and do that stuff. And I think he played for the West Side All Stars, which they played out of the Armory that you can still see off the Ryan there at like near White Sox Park, that big huge building that was an Armory. I think they had a football team. I think that's where he played at. If I'm not positive, but they you know, they couldn't miss a Bear game. I mean, God, you know, help if somebody had dinner during the game on Sunday or something, all those kind of things. And, yeah, you know, they both died. I didn't see anybody from the Bears at the wake. I mean, you know, it's clearly a one-way street. And I've bounced into, like, two or three people about the Bears in Arlington Heights and how it's absolutely better for everybody if the Bears build a place there and they're going to have a couple of concerts, so the whole area is going to benefit. And, oh, by the way, the Bears are going to be worth $6.5 billion. It's like they feel like they're part of the place, and if you can make McCaskey's wealth triple, that somehow it's part of you. I mean, I don't get it. Nobody likes sports better than me. I mean, David, how many times have we played various sports together? I mean, a day without a game was a bad day for me. That's why I started playing handball in the wintertime, because you couldn't find a game every day. But if you did that between basketball 3 nights a week and handball 3 days a week, I had something to do every day. But the idea that you just got to pour this money, we don't care about antitrust, we don't care about the player. I mean, to me, I never could go down that road. But the same people are talking about, the college is playing more games. So what if they play more games? You know, they're going to get paid a little bit. And yet David and I know a guy, well, we know his brother very well, and I knew something David knew the whole family, I didn't, but no go nameless, but the guy played at a high school, and he played at a college, never played pro, and guess what? He's got this, you know, they sent the brain someplace, and they came back, and he's got the whatever it was. And that's why his last few years, I guess, he don't really want to be around the guy, from what I understand. You know, we don't care about that. On the same day we get these kind of results, we're gonna want the college kids to play like four more games, or three, or two, or ten, or whatever. I mean, look what's happened in professional football. There was no give back from the union saying, hey, wait a minute, 16 games is enough. Now we're gonna go 17. Why not make it 30? Why not make it 40? I mean, just get up another soldier and let him go. I mean, it's not like baseball where you or softball where you pretty much intend on coming out of the game with all your limbs in one piece. I mean, not that anybody can't get hurt walking off a curb, you can, but I mean, David, we managed to play basketball how many nights, and once in a while somebody turn an ankle or something, but it wasn't like, I mean, we were not about at age 35 to go play tackle football with equipment, were we? I don't think so.
No, I did not.
No.
Yeah. Me neither, Tom.
No, what are you doing? So at some point, is the pleasure or the gambling that so important and you don't care about any of the people?
Oh, well, certainly. I mean, you bring up the point of gambling, and this has now, I think, contaminated all sports. I mean, there was always gambling. I'm not very naive about all this, but the amount of money in it, which is kind of hard to fathom, I think, and hard to get a good handle on, too. But it is such a rich source of money that I don't see that there's much incentive for policing it in any kind of way that would diminish its visibility or the frequency of games. The more games, the better. Certainly when there's more money to be made by any game, when you would think of just gambling, it doesn't matter about the quality of the playing or the interest of the audience or the spectators from what's happening. It's just the fact that there is this competition, and there's people betting on it. The more of that, the better. And who cares if people get beat up or if they get injured for life or if their families are wiped out financially because of medical bills? That's not my problem. You know, my problem is a different one, and that somebody else has to take care of this other problem. That's like the real mentality I see now, and I'm kind of appalled by it.
Well, yeah, the more people say that, oh, by the way, how can I say this without saying it wrong to anybody? The more people say, if you're going to be a carpenter or a plumber, you shouldn't go to college because it's not worth it. Every hair on the back of my neck, if there is any, stands up and says, what are you talking about? Education for your population, for people. You want to go through life somewhat educated. You don't want to go through life a dummy, do you? Why is it that a carpenter shouldn't know what the money supply is, right? Or shouldn't know what the Constitution says? I mean, do we really think that? I mean, how could anybody possibly?
Of course, the flip side of that is that you can go to college, into some pretty big name colleges, and come out knowing nothing about the money supply or world history or American history too. And I don't think that was always the case, but the education has been devalued to the extent that my thinking has changed quite a bit about it. That I don't think it's a solution. I don't think it's a guarantee of a necessarily better life. It certainly guarantees higher debt to start out in your job career, but it doesn't mean that you're going to be necessarily smarter or better equipped to handle things in tough times. So it's what college has unfortunately become too, and maybe it's gone the way of sports, both professional and college too, that it's really been devalued.
Well, but it's also
what it started out to be anyway.
But it's such a monopoly. You know, when you're given so much in the certification process, I mean, you should be able to have, going off the roads here, but you should be able to have an economics and a sociology and a psychology and a history class, even if you pay the person $100,000 a year, which I think is way more than a lot of professors are getting paid. Okay, they're going to teach two semesters, 2 to 3 classes a semester, so that's, you know, whatever. So that's $50,000 a semester. And we're talking 25 people in a class, 3 classes, 75 people goes into $50,000 is like what, $800, $750. If my math is not horrible, and a class should cost, even at a good school, should cost $1,000, not 5 or 6
or 10
or 10. Right. You know, I mean, what are we talking about? I mean, you don't need some mega place. With dorms on State Street and stuff to teach somebody, you know, entry level economics. I mean, you just don't need that. I mean, but having said all that, you can see it work your way down through the whole chain. You know, John, people been gambling to you and me. I mean, I used to go to Vegas all the time before I started trading, and to a certain extent, I mean, I'm doing a lot of investing for people, but I also have some people who like to. If you see something cheap or expensive, they want to do something, and we do it in a relatively risk-free way. But there's no such thing as risk-free, type of thing. And to be perfectly honest, if I see an option or a stock I think is cheap, and I buy it and I make money for my clients, I feel pretty damn good about it. Once in a while, you get to beat the man, right? And obviously, every day I show up wanting to do that, so I don't have a problem with that. And I don't have a problem with people gambling. I used to love to play poker back when I knew. And I can't imagine me playing now. My skills would be so awful. But the point is, you also have to understand, if you've got a brain cell working, that for the governor, and not him personally, this is just revenue to him. It's not pleasure to you. It's every time somebody makes a bet at the horses, I get 15% of it. Well, I get 7%. Say, if goes to the track. I don't care who wins or who loses or whether. All I know is at the end of the day, out of $1 billion bet, I get 20 million or 80 million or something. That's all I care about. And whether 15 guys are somewhere because they gambled their money away, or 25 waitresses on the way out of the Pepe's, and where Audrey and I go, make $100 and blow 50 on a video poker game on the way out the door every single day instead of buying food for their kids, I don't care. So, I mean, it's a whole different subject when you look at it from a different point of view, right? It's not. I mean, the lottery is not about you winning. It's about the morons that buy it. And I've been one of those morons.
It's about you losing over and over.
Every single time you pay $1 in the lottery, the state gets 65 cents. That's what it's about. It has nothing to do with you enjoying it. And the once in a while somebody wins $1 million or 2 million or whatever the hell it is. You know, am I right or wrong, David? I mean,
no.
It's a cruel tax to people who can't do the odds. Is what it is.
Always been that way.
Always been that way. But at least in horse racing, they paid off pretty well, right? They paid back 85%. The lottery pays back 45%. Well, no wonder the state doesn't care about horse racing. They'd rather be spending money in a lottery.
That's true. I mean, you have the benefit of being out of doors. You can socialize. You can eat and drink. I mean, they had a lot going for it besides everything else, too. So
we had a
spectator sport. You know?
We had who the hell got a man? Was somebody invited? There's a guy on South Side that wrote some book, and Manny probably knows. I wonder if we can get him back, because he was a great guest. He was a guy who was writing papers about the lottery and how basically bleeped up it is. And I've never, I mean, you go into these places, I mean, once in a while, if the lotto, this is how basic I am, if the lotto gets over like 10 mil, I realize it's been like 15 weeks, people have been pouring money in there and nobody's won. We get up $1 a person in the office and we go play, because that week if somebody wins, they pay out a lot more than they take in. So it's somewhat of a better bet because the money's piled up, right? I'm not going to go into a game theory and right now, but I could, but I don't want to. When you walk downstairs, or downstairs, you walk into one of these places where they got all those spool games, the instant games. I've never played one of them. But there are people that know, like, all 50 of them.
Oh, yeah.
They know, well, give me two of those and four of those. And I'm going, God, this person, if they could transfer that knowledge into building computers, they'd probably be a genius. I mean, how do you keep track of all this crap? But all of a sudden, we get a guy in here, and he's saying, oh, no, those things are, they're crooked as hell. And I'm sitting there going, why are they crooked? Everybody accuses me of being the most sinister, suspicious guy there is. I don't hold a candle to where I should be, probably. The guy goes, well, those things, say there's 100,000 tickets in the, you know, in the Dave Scatina funny face game, right? So there's probably 10 winners in there. Well, if the first 100,000 or the first 1,000 tickets are sold and all 10 winners come out, they sell the other 99 knowing there's no winners left.
Right.
You know, and I'm sitting there going, well, that's... Or if they sell 90,000 tickets and nobody's won, so they know the 10 are left in the bag in the last 10,000 or whatever, they come and pull the game. So nobody wins. And I'm sitting there going, you got to be bleeping. it's not the pari-mutuel system that even the regular lottery... Even though, you know, they don't pay out very much, at least they pay out 45% of what went in. These other guys, they're gaming the thing back and forth. And yet you walk in there and it's always somebody who probably, you know, can't afford as much, and they're sitting there, give me five of those and 10 of those, and they've got a big stack of this crap. That to me is about as regressive a taxation as there can be. Isn't
it? I saw that the other day. I was in the liquor store in my neighborhood, and the guy in front of me was older than I was, which doesn't seem possible these days, but he was dressed like a bum. I mean, he was kind of a begraggled-looking guy. Nothing was right about him, his shoes, his pants, his head and shave. But he had a fistful of these, you know, list of numbers to hand to the clerk who was punching them into the lotto machine. And it just kind of broke my heart because, I mean, there are now six people behind me waiting to buy their booze and get out of there. And this poor guy was, you know, hoping somehow maybe someday he wouldn't have to dress this way or look this way. But I thought the whole thing is just, it's such a misleading of the public. And the people who are least able to kind of question it or assume the worst of, you know, what this whole system has become, it takes advantage of these people's gullibility and their the fact that they really are pretty depressed in every single way and cashing in on these, you know, hopes that are completely illusory. You know, there's no way these people are ever going to get one-tenth back of what they're putting into it. But the system depends on people like that, and it depends on keeping them in the dark, too.
Well, the Copperfields, I used to live at 70 West Sherman here, and there was a Copperfields downstairs. It was kind of like a 7-Eleven. So I'd go down on Saturday morning. As you know, David, I take Gloria out to breakfast every Saturday, and I'd leave there at the same time because she always wanted me there at the same time. So I'd stop there for coffee. There, maybe 3 out of 4 weeks, I'd see the same guy, and he was a street guy. You know, I mean, he was better dressed, so I don't think he slept outside, but he clearly was out, you know, on the sidewalk. You know, you got a buck kind of thing, and he'd come in on usually $20-$25. He'd get a quart of Coke, which then was like a dollar. Two big bags of Doritos, and the rest of them were lottery tickets. And I'm thinking, this dude is paying a higher marginal tax than anybody on earth. Certainly Warren Buffett, right?
Absolutely.
and it's a way to, you know, I don't think we want to know. I don't think we want to know.
No, I mean, how much of this depends on people not even questioning it. Or, you know, expecting there to be any kind of fairness in it. Because once you expect there to be fairness, all you can be is disappointed. It's best not to poke around in it. If you buy into it, you have to kind of also buy into the fact that this doesn't bear a lot of scrutiny. So you got to just kind of look the other way. And how sad is that? You know?
Well, one thing, we only got a couple of seconds here. I will warn, you know, we got 1 minute. I will warn the population, because I think most people are sensing this. As you start talking about the state now, got a credit rating actually improved because they got all this money from the government. Well, they got the
BAA3 to BAA2 or something, right?
But they got money from the government, And it, well, you're going to see your elected, whatever they are, in Washington, having a huge debate, Republicans versus Democrats, over whether we should raise corporate tax rate from 21 to 24 and how we're going to put these poor guys out of business and how it's going to affect you and all this bull crap. Just be mindful that this year and last year and probably next year, the federal government is spending twice as much as they're taking in. So someplace, somewhere, when you think that you don't want your tax rate to go from 35 to 37, just think about it's going to double, whether it's going to go through state taxes, whether it's going to go through increased Social Security, whether it's going to go through increased gas. You're going to pay these guys double somewhere along the line in the next few years. And it's not about 21 to 23. The numbers just don't match up there. I'm sorry, but they don't. Am I right, John, or not?
That's just a fake debate. Absolutely.
Total fake debate. I mean, and good for TV, and you know, and good for whoever it is, good for getting reelected, but these guys are so far behind the eight ball here with money, I don't know what they're going to do with it. Anyway, and that happy thought. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jocks, SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures down 18. John, am I going to see you tonight?
I hope so. I won't see you on Monday because we'll be off the air for the holiday, but I will, you know, hope you have a good holiday, you and yours, and make it last. So.
Yeah, no, don't do anything I wouldn't, you know, as
they say.
We'll be back tomorrow with Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI Pro Direct. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.